Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation, which is a different Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, we typically have a very loose, unstructured Marin Open over here on The Greatest Discovery.
Oh, yeah.
Greatest Generation, a show where work gets put in, ideas for different kinds of Marin get come up with.
There's a whole room full of people coming up with those ideas.
Not over here.
It's still just you and me. There's just a room for it.
1,000 lower primates at 1,000 typewriters.
Right. Yeah.
But today we are going to open up a box on the episode. We're going to open up boxes.
Yeah, we usually save this for Twitch, but not today. It's because it's the holiday season and your friend and mine, and the friend to all friends of DeSoto, Bill Tilley, has sent us a holiday box, as is his tradition. And what a great use of our Marin today to open that box and see what delights are inside. This is going to be the one time where Bill just fucking quits. He's like, after this year,
yeah,
fuck this. Bill, I just want to make a request. If you do ever quit Uxbridge Shimoda, do it in the form of a box. I think that'd be consistent with the Bill Tilley way of doing things in our experience.
It could be like one of those boxes that shoots glitter everywhere, like they always do to prank porch pirates on YouTube.
Tell you what, you glitter bomb me, that sends only one message. You have quit.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Well, I'm looking at, how would you describe the size of this box, Ben? Maybe a 1x1x1, kind of a cube shape?
Yours is a different form factor than mine. Mine is more like the box that a box of shoes would ship in.
Once again, I'm shocked at how expensive it is to mail anything in this country, and I really hope that Bill availed himself from his workplace mailroom to do this.
Yeah, me too. Not the Uxbridge Shimoda workplace mailroom, though.
Yeah.
The real job that he has.
No, some real low lives working there.
You're never going to work your way up from that mail.
Yeah. What is there to work your way up to?
Oh, man, these are gift wrapped in here.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah, mine too. Bill, you're just the greatest. I got a stack of gifts in here.
I got a letter. Let's see. It's got... It's got Feklar claws on it.
I've got four gifts and a Feklar claws card as well. Feklar, of course, being the official mascot of the Greatest Generation holiday season.
Who the heck are you?
The Klingons call me Feklar.
You are not Feklar.
Why, of course I am.
You've been good, haven't you? Because if you haven't,
Feklar claws will give you a kiss on the cheek.
Feklar Claus is going to come down your chimney with his sleeveless leather tank top there to drool all over the cookies you've left for him.
I'm not going to read this letter out loud because it contains
names that I try not to divulge on the show, etc.
Yeah. But a personal and kind note to me and you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Wow, I don't know which package to start with. I'm going to start with one of the bigs.
Oh yeah, that's the order.
Bill said that there were some Star Trek things in these, but that makes it seem like they're not all Star Trek things.
Awesome. The first gift I opened is a xenomorph.
Oh, is that the one from Alien 3 that's like,
yeah,
white?
The white one. It's with a companion egg and face hugger. Oh, this is great.
Oh, Adam, I am excited to say that I got a blue xenomorph.
You blew your xenomorph.
I blew my xenomorph.
That's awesome.
I also have a face hugger. It's in like a canister, like,
yeah,
one of those.
Oh,
it looks,
yeah,
like a safe way to transport
for
a face
studying
hugger. Yeah.
Wow.
Action articulated figure. Amazing.
I'm so glad this show has allowed us to get back into action figures. Guilt free.
Did you see anything?
No, sir. I didn't see you playing with your dolls again.
Good.
All right. I'm opening up gift number two.
Okay.
This looks like an action figure also, but action figures are so hard to wrap, and Bill has nailed it. Bill,
yeah,
a veteran of the wrapping of action figures game.
He's a real artiste when it comes to that.
Oh boy, I got a Saru action figure.
Really?
Thanks, Bill.
With dog dig action fingers?
I'm holding up a bunch of dog dicks like so many socks and and thanking Bill.
How did we open the same two packages? I got Saru as well.
That's amazing.
You know, they really captured his face, but they did not capture his build in this action figure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he needs longer legs, if that's possible.
Longer and skinnier everything.
They did give him the hoof boots, though.
They did, yeah.
You like to see that.
He really has some fucked up feet.
Not the most fucked up thing about him.
You know, it occurs to me, we've spent a lot of time talking about Saru's fingies. We've never actually seen him take his shoes off. What do you think that would look like?
I want to see Saru in repose. Like, all we ever see him do is work. He's working at work, or he's back in his condo watering his plants.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Why doesn't he just kick back on the Shay Long, take off those crazy boots, let us see them feet?
Let's see them tootsies, Saru.
If the hands are that gross, the feet have got to be an order of magnitude grosser, right?
Or they're just hooves, which I feel like aren't that gross.
Oh, I got another action figure, Ben. It is a Rocky action figure.
Whoa.
Look at this. So cool.
Wow. Which version of the terry cloth bathrobe is Rocky wearing?
I'm looking at the red and the yellow robe, which would indicate to me a Rocky II film reference.
Man. Well, I have opened up a Predator action figure from the movie Predator.
Whoa.
This Predator has wrist blades, a smart disc, a plasma bazooka, an electro claw, which you will remember as being forensic evidence that they find in the ceiling in Predator 2.
That's right. Yeah.
This is a cool Predator. That's one cool Predator.
The only line of dialogue I will remember for the rest of my life from Predator 2 is when I think it's in the cold open, like there's a crazy gang war happening that the Predator gets involved in.
A totally absurd, over-the-top gang war.
You remember the guy slapping the cocaine on his shoulder just to have it like available to him during the upcoming gang war? He slaps his shoulder with the coke and he's like, "Oh yeah, the scorpion is ready." Every time I inhale, like I take an allergy drug every day that is an intranasal allergy drug.
Yeah, like a Flonase type of deal.
Every single morning that I take it, I think it. I think that exact line of dialogue.
With Flonase.
It will never cease to amaze me, looking back at 80s and 90s drug war media, that people watched that and went, yep, the drug war is working and it is a good thing to spend money on.
Hey, I got a Predator 2. Not from Predator 2. I got the Hunter series Predator, Ben. And he's mostly naked.
Oh, that's what I got too, I think.
He's City Hunter Predator.
Oh, he's City Hunter Predator.
Check him out.
I must have gotten like Jungle Hunter Predator because he's green. Yours is like yellow and orange.
Right. Yeah. I'm getting a lot of the Friends of DeSoto are seeing a lot of reflection off of the box here as I show the camera.
I could see myself in that reflection.
God, 25 points of articulation.
That is a fucking crazy number of points.
My own body doesn't have 25 points of articulation.
Not right now, anyway.
This is amazing. Thanks, Bill.
Adam, my final action figure is Q in Q Judge uniform.
Wow.
Get up. The outfit he is wearing in the first and the last episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. This is great.
What do you think's under that robe, Ben?
I'm gonna have to open up the box and find out, I suppose.
Oh, you're gonna destroy its value.
I know that Bill is probably fainting.
Oh no. So
hopefully he has a chaise longue nearby.
Bill has left the chat.
One of Q's legs fell out when I
That's what's under the robe.
I stand before you, defrocked.
Oh no.
I think Q is broken.
Does that increase the value again? Like, for you decreased the value, but now that you know that you've gotten a faulty Q, now it's a collector's item.
Upside down airplane on a stamp Q.
Yeah.
This looks like it is actually snapped plastic and not just...
its
arm fell out.
It just keeps busting apart.
Oh, no. This is a very low-quality Q action figure, I have to say.
Oh, no.
I have no power.
You gonna put the action figure maker on blast?
Let's see. Who's the manufacturer? Marty Abrams Presents Mego, I think, is the manufacturer.
Hey, Marty, you fucked up the Q action figure. What are you doing?
You fucking blew it, Marty. this is Zerbrechen, as they say, unfortunately.
Hey, if you follow the Greatest Trek Instagram, I'll direct you there to see the super fucked up picture of this of this dismembered Q.
What's the kid in Toy Story that makes the
yeah,
Frankenstein monster toys?
That's what you're doing.
We need to find that kid.
Hey Q, it appears that the trial has ended and the sentence is dismemberment.
So play nice.
He's been drawn and quartered.
Yeah.
And now his limbs will be buried in the four corners of the kingdom.
Everyone thought that humanity was on trial, but it was actually Q, like being countersued by Picard.
Picard said, "I'm not on trial with you. You're on trial with me."
Wow. Hey, Bill Tilly, one of the great friends of DeSoto, our social media manager, just one of the great people we've ever had the good fortune of meeting in our creation and production of this show.
We feel so lucky to work with you, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah, truly one of the greats.
These are some fun toys, and I'll send the Q back, I suppose.
Hey, 3 out of 4 great toys isn't bad, Bill.
Not a bad number. I am a little bit afraid to open up the Saru. Just
yeah.
He seems more delicate than Q in a lot of ways.
It's just a one of those can of snakes just filled with dog dicks. Yeah.
Well, Adam, do you want to get into the episode of Star Trek Discovery that we watched for today's episode?
Yeah, we're going to see what's inside the storm they've been studying. Hopefully it's not full of dog dicks. It's Star Trek Discovery, Season 4, Episode 6, Stormy Weather. A Frakes episode, finally, back in the warm embrace of a Jonathan Frakes-directed episode.
Can you remember the tallest man you've ever seen?
I was wondering if we were going to get another one.
Feels good. And he lets you know in a couple of different scenes just who's at the helm of this one.
Yeah, yeah. This is, he does not leave that to mystery, does he?
I've been thinking a lot about family. It's comforting, you know?
It can be.
We open on a disturbing appropriation of Akali culture by Michael Burnham here, who has made her own crystalline entity tree for herself and is really throwing it all over in Book's face, like throwing all of her surviving family members in Book's face, like, look at the tree I can make. Hey, Book, I got you a crystalline entity tree too. And it's like the Charlie Brown crystalline entity tree with like no surviving family members for Book.
Yeah, pretty fucked up to do this on his dead dad's birthday.
You know, if we ever got married, I could put your father in. No, I guess I couldn't because he's dead, huh? He blew up with the rest of them.
And Book is like, what's the order that you're putting them on? It's not everybody's rank. You're not putting it according to that. You're on the same branch as your little brother there. What's the scheme here? And she's like, oh no, this is just how the Akali do it. It's every which way but loose how you put people's faces on the family tree.
I think it's also weird that you've got like doubles of Spock on there. You've got young Spock and also older bearded Spock as well. Like, what does that exactly mean?
Do you actually think the beard is working?
And is that Mirror Universe Giorgio or regular edition?
Doubles are good, but triples are better.
Because it seems like if you had Mirror Universe Giorgio on there, that would be bad.
Book gestures to his tiny crystalline entity tree and it's just like dead birds. Dead birds and syrup. The Book tree story.
So he is pretty eager for the fray. He is arguing that they should probably go start figuring out who made the DMA and kick their fucking teeth in. And Michael Burnham is like, all right, man, slow your roll. Mm-hmm. Like, we have some evidence that we need to go examine. There's this rift in space. It's a crime scene. Mm-hmm. This is CSI, and it seems that the galaxy is being
rift apart.
Yeah!
You had the glasses and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I did that for the viewers at home.
One of the great video episodes happening today. This is great. Book wants to go outside of Federation space to do this investigation. I mean, and his argument is pretty sound, right? They keep skating to where the puck was instead of where it's going. Like,
yeah.
Like, following this thing around isn't doing anyone any good. It doesn't work.
Is that why I was not good at ice hockey?
No, I mean, you weren't good at ice hockey because you were totally uncoordinated.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
You were wearing two left skates.
I was actually pretty good at skating. It was the puck handling part that I failed at.
Could you put on skates today and skate around like the Holiday ice rink were there to be one?
Not only could I can. I still have skates that fit.
What?
Yeah.
God. This is maybe the only time I've ever been envious of you. Because I am totally the partner to my wife who wants to go ice skating, who's like, yeah, I'll totally do that with you. And then I'm like grabbing the wall, like moving my way down the wall while she ice skates beautifully in the middle.
You've got the pillow from your bed roped around your waist so that if you fall on your butt.
I've got the walker, like the walker with the tennis balls.
I do feel fortunate that I learned how to skate at a young age.
You're so tall, man. When you fall on the ice, you're falling a great distance.
Yeah, yeah. It scares me now, for sure.
And ice is so hard.
I mean, and like, when you learn to skate for ice hockey, you're wearing pads that make falling not that big a deal. And then when you go to, like, the Holiday ice rink with your special person and you fall, it's like, fuck, I just fractured my knee.
It's the weird kind of parkour sensibility of it. Like, moving slow and falling straight down on the ice is actually more damaging than moving forward, like directionally, because you're bouncing off of the ice at an angle, right, instead of just crumpling right on it.
Like a skipped rock.
Yeah, that's how you want to be.
Yeah. Michael Burnham and Saru are headed to the bridge to go examine this rift, and they have a little brief interaction about, hey, so Zora, the ship's computer, has fifis now. What do you think of that?
Yeah.
Interesting development.
Yeah. Let's continue to ignore this looming threat to, like, no one says control at this point, but everyone's got to be thinking it, right?
Yeah. Everybody's asshole is tightened up.
We just destroyed a thinking computer not that long ago.
Yeah, yeah. There's a pretty fun, like, cut around the ship, or I guess it's they're kind of like push edits around the ship to everybody getting excited to be ordered to the bridge or ordered to their stations for a big mission.
All crew report to station.
I love a wipe transition so much.
Yeah, you never get them in Star Trek. It was it really caught my attention.
Give me all these wipes. It's big fun.
I saw a Lurian in the lounge where Adira and Gray were playing playing their game.
That's where a Lurian belongs, for sure.
A Lurian in Starfleet. Now we've seen everything.
Hey, do you think Saru wishes he still had his threat ganglia to know when death was imminent? Like, there's got to be a part of him that feels like, because it feels like death is so present in every season of Star Trek Discovery, that could be useful on some level, right?
I wonder if his spikes, like, how long does it take to reload them? Like, when he shot that guy in, like, season 3, episode 2.
Is he, like, Nerf machine gun that just has 200 of those darts back there ready to go?
Or does he have 5 on each side and then it takes, like, 6 months for them to regrow?
I mean, much like the Nerf thing, do you need to go pick up those spikes and put them back in your neck?
Right. The second you get your kid action ganglia, you're gonna just find those spikes all over the house for the rest of your fucking life.
It's worse than stepping on a Lego. You step on one of Saru's ganglia. God. Yeah. Ouch.
Poisonous.
Yeah. Gray is left alone when everyone is called to the bridge, because unlike how a galaxy class operates, there don't seem to be any civilians on this ship, right? So this is gonna happen a lot to Gray.
Yeah. Adira has their first on the bridge assignment, which they are nervous about again. the all new Adira, who has suddenly got performance anxiety,
right?
And and so Gray is left to just kind of twiddle his thumbs in the lounge. It's kind of nice to be left alone in a bar, right? Like, you just walk behind it and pour yourself whatever you want.
I was thinking that too, but in the perfect future without paper money, you could probably walk behind there and, like, the 32nd century is an open bar everywhere you go, right?
God, what a beautiful place to live.
Yeah. It's just a wedding every day, basically. What a nightmare, actually. That actually sounds like the worst.
Yeah. Too much of a good thing, I guess. So they pull up on this rift, and it really has Eye of Sauron energy. And the speech from the captain is about what we need to find here is forensic energy. And she rattles off some different types of things that might be, like industrial particles, different kinds of shit. And then they take it in pretty quickly. We are flying through this plasma cloud where there's some turbulence.
I think crucially, everyone's given a warning, right? Like, we're going to suspend drink service until we get to the other side of the rift. You know, you might want to keep things buckled up until we get there. And that's what sets up how weird it is that things get calm.
Is it supposed to be bumpy?
This is indeed unexpected.
Calm is stressful because we've been given the context of how it should be.
Yeah, we've been led to expect non-calm. And when we get to see what's on the view screen, it's very Nagilum-like. I thought for sure that we were in Nagilum because it's just black outside the screen and they can't. I mean, it's the same problem, right? It's like there is no way of knowing where the edges are. Mm-hmm. They can't get a fix on anything. There's nothing. There's no, like, background radiation, which doesn't make any sense at all. And pretty quickly, Book is like, all right, I'm going to get in my ship and fly around and see what this is.
Because no one can stop me, because I'm Cleveland Booker.
If there are birds out there, I'm going to find them.
This plays upon a pretty instinctual fear, like the fear of, like, nothing is as scary as something.
So instead of Book, they send a Dot. I did not expect to have as an emotional a reaction to the death of a Dot as I did.
Sounds like it's screaming.
I guess it was the last season where the Dots were, like, temporarily housing the sphere energy and were, like, semi-sentient.
I had so many questions about this in the same way that you did, because it is clear both in what we're hearing and how the crew people are describing this moment, that the Dot is being tortured to death and yeah. being shredded out in space. But like last season, Zora put herself into the Dot, and the question of their sentience remains, I think. Did something actually die is a question that is not answered here or anywhere else in the episode. And like Nilsson says that it's been eaten in a way yeah. that suggests, you know, a life like that the life form has been eaten. And then like cutting to the wide shot also suggests that a death has happened here too in a Star Trek visual language.
My understanding was that Zora was now out of the Dots and back into mm-hmm. the ship, but that was definitely called into question by how like personal the death of this thing seemed to be. They seem really upset about it. Like more upset than the guy that actually dies later.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Burnham is like built for this shit because after they witnessed the torture and murder of a Dot in front of them, she like immediately reframes this as a fun science project they all have the ability to solve.
Should have stayed home today.
Yeah. I guess Booker is pretty happy that he took her advice for action and didn't go out there, though.
No kidding. That was a close one.
Close as fuck.
I like the idea is just to keep shooting shit out there. They shoot a yeah. flare blast.
An emergency buoy.
Into the blackness.
They do. And this one is eaten even quicker than the Dot, which means that the edge is coming toward them. No medevac coming for that flare that they shot.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
You get a Detmer scene where she wheels around and does math in the room. She doesn't have to count on her fingers.
Yeah, she's got that computer head, doesn't she?
Yeah.
How much will it cost them?
Total of 1.46 million 62 salaries round trip.
She's got this all figured out. But this is scary, right? Because the thing that is torturing and killing Dots is now getting closer to the ship. And who knows what's going to happen if it touches that ship.
They're going to have to become a Dot to find out what it is.
Book was so horrified by the murder of the Dot that he's beat it over to engineering to kick it with Stamets.
Sunny, friendly Stamets expressing appreciation for Book being present to provide a helping hand. And what they're trying to do is get as much extra energy as they possibly can in order to shore up the shields, which once again, they're kind of extending to maximum range. It's very similar to what they did around the space station when the DMA first showed up.
Seems to make sense. It's going to take a lot of power, though.
It's going to take a lot of power. So much power that if they start needing more, they're going to have to start shutting down critical systems on multiple decks.
Why did the captain call for red alert? Is there anything I can do to help?
No action is required at this time.
Come on, there must be something you can tell me.
Gray is in the lounge alone. And what else are you going to do but talk to the one person who's there to talk to? And Gray's mm-hmm. like, hey, Zora, what's going on out there? And Zora goes into great detail about the torture and murder of a Dot out in space, which made me wonder, like, is there anything that Zora wouldn't tell a civilian about a mission that they're on? This is an awful moment for Zora.
Yeah, I mean, Gray really has to pry to get some of this. And what Zora describes sort of reminded me of going into an anechoic chamber. Like, have you ever been in one of those?
No, what mean?
It's like those super, super soundproof rooms that they test speakers and microphones in where like literally nothing bounces off the walls. So you can't hear anything but your own body. And it's like overwhelming Zora's systems that there's nothing outside. There's only inside. And so the ship's sensors are like flipping out because of the kind of imbalance in that.
Gray kind of senses that there might be an emotional issue happening with Zora and decides to suggest that they play a game to take her mind off of things. And yeah. Gray has clearly not ever seen War Games, because if you want to make a War Games, you challenge a computer to play a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Shall we play a game?
It might help clear your head.
I thought that this was a bit of a missed opportunity in the script, because Gray says consciously they didn't take this opportunity, right? Because Gray says something about this is a great way to clear your head, and then corrects himself, like, because Zora doesn't have a head. but shouldn't more be made of how having a head normative Gray is?
I want to see more Gollum shit out of Gray. Like,
yeah.
Do some weird Gollum games. Do some weird, like, street Gollum magic, Gray. I want to see some... Take off your head. Get weird.
Gollums are dope at stratagema. Why not play stratagema with Zora?
Yeah.
That's a really occupying game. You know, like, that's a game that's really going to get your head out of the clouds. Oops, I mean, mind off of things. Instead, they play Guess Who.
Yeah. I don't know how to play that game.
You just say, like, does your person have curly hair?
Oh, that game.
Does your person have glasses?
I see. Is your person a golem? Back to the mission, Saru is telling Michael Burnham what everyone already knows, that this mission is going sideways fast. So what do you say we just leave and try this again another day?
It's a really good idea. So she says, like, let's start backing up. And this is a huge problem because they don't have anything to get a fix on. I kind of wish that they'd addressed the idea of just literally firing reverse thrusters.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's possible that this thing is, like, rotating around them also. So
yeah.
Where they would go in that case isn't exactly the same as where they came in. So the idea of jumping comes up. And this is something that Stamets initially advises against.
But luckily, Stamets doesn't have to do it. He delegates that job to Book and then watches as Book gets shocked with Worf lightning for the effort.
That great. And they don't get out, crucially. The lightning shocks Book, but the ship stays where it started.
Book's going to be fine. This is a bit of Worf lightning that makes him think of his dad again and what a jerk he is.
Dad? Durax. Been a long time.
No.
Daddy, Book's father calls him Durax, which made me wonder what the dad's name is. Maybe Lifestyle Skin?
Ramses? Maybe his dad's name is just simply Cherry Flavor.
This guy is a real son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Really waste no time in making Book feel like a complete asshole for partnering up with Michael Burnham and being in the chain of command on this ship.
He's got that bad dad energy who's like, you know, she's just going to break your heart, son. She's always going to choose Starfleet over you.
Doesn't seem like he's wrong.
No, I mean, that's probably the good advice that he's got. Everything else is very bad. This is a dad that you shouldn't feel obligated to visit during the holidays.
Take it easy. Don't worry about him. He's not worried about you.
Book stares at his dad and he's like, I watched you die on Quajon, along with billions of others. Also, happy birthday, or whatever.
Stamets gets Book down to Six Bay, where Dr. Pollard and Dr. Culber are both available to work on him. And they explain to Michael Burnham that Book is hallucinating, but the thing that is causing him to hallucinate is slowly receding. But there's some interesting readings coming from this, some like weird energy that entered his head, and they want to like get a better sense of what that stuff is.
We're already seeing small percentage decreases in the firing rate. I expect the trend to continue.
What he's saying is you'll be all right eventually.
Pollard and Culber are like the perfect people you want when you're tripping a little too hard.
Yeah.
Just like they just wrap up, they wrap Book up in a blanket, give him a little bit of juice. Just tell him it's temporary, man. It's going to pass, no problem.
They are the people you want to meet in the chill out tent.
Yeah.
They're giving him orange juice.
Yeah. But while Book is still afflicted with, you know, the side effects of the Worf lightning, Stamets is like, look, we got to study this Worf lightning in Book's brain because in there has the answers that we're looking for about the DMA.
He also shows them like before and after entering the rift of what the mycelial network looks like, and it is a real fucking mess inside this rift. So he says basically jumping is out of the question for now.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to figure out a different way to get out of here.
Back in the lounge, Gray continues to play games with Zora. Not tic-tac-toe. What are they playing?
Playing Guess Who.
Of course they're playing Guess Who. And Zora shares with Gray that the game is working. Zora's like, hey, Gray, thanks for playing me the Guess Who game, because it's really allowed me to chill the fuck out and not stress about every little burned out light bulb on every floor of the ship that was really getting to me and stressing me out. Every replicator that's spitting out like fritters instead of fruit punch. Like,
right.
Like that stuff was really getting me down.
Yeah. Like, for example, the rift that's forming on deck 17.
Yeah.
That would have been really really bumming me out, but instead I'm kind of focused on kicking your ass and guess who? And Gray's like, wait, maybe we should tell somebody about the hole that is opening up in the hull.
Yeah.
And Dr. Pollard gets sent down to check on this, and Crewman Cortez gets Steve Zond out into space.
Crewman Cortez lives the greatest gen dream.
I am so jealous.
I saw everything that happened to Cortez here, and I'm like, why not us?
Why not us? Can you imagine us getting on an episode directed by Frakes and getting blown out into space?
No way.
Well, you'd have to have an interaction with him, and I think that'd be a huge problem, personally.
Yeah,
but look,
I guess
the actor who played Crewman Cortez does a great job here. No question.
Splendid.
But hey, check it out, line producer. You get two for the price of one when you blow me and Ben out of an airlock.
The offer, as we have stated over and over again, we will pay our own airfare to Toronto.
Yes.
We will donate anything you are required by law to pay us to charity. All we want to do is get blown out into space.
Yes.
We'll pay our own hotel room.
Yeah. We'll make our own uniforms if we have to. Or maybe like the scene is so fraught that like, oh, Ben, Gersha Phillips doesn't even have to make costumes for us, because here's why. We're like,
we're in the sonic showers and we get blown out.
Yeah, exactly. We're in a sonic shower, or we're like, we're in a compartment where like all fabric matter is being dissolved before the occupants are blown out into space. We're here to help.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. If it's on Strange New Worlds or Picard, that'd be fine. But Disco is really the show I would be thrilled to do this on.
So Gray, having taken great umbrage with the fact that Zora doesn't share this blown out compartment information with Michael Burnham, does.
Yeah. Gray tries to kind of comfort Zora a little bit, but is like, hey, Captain, I actually have been working with Zora on focusing her mind, and it helps. And they're like, hey, focusing would be a good solution to the problem that we have right now.
Greater focus creates greater awareness.
No shit.
What you want out of your computer primarily is a little bit of focus.
Is what Gray is suggesting basically close a bunch of tabs?
Sure seems that way.
Go down to the dock, find some stuff that you're not using, right click it and quit.
Hey Zora, maybe the tax documents you haven't worked with for many, many years are worth just getting rid of instead of storing forever. What do you think of that?
What do you think Zora jacks off to? Other ships?
Yeah. Yeah, ships going into nebulas.
I mean, wouldn't shock me.
How much credibility does Gray have in this moment, do you think? Because Gray is a golem who is playing games to get his coordination back. Like, Gray is still, like, not 100%, right? Because that's the whole reason for playing the games, is, like, to bring back dexterity or coordination or whatever.
I guess so. Nobody would have any reason to mistrust Gray in this moment the way they sort of do have a reason to mistrust Zora.
Yeah, but I just mean in the context of Gray's character, like Gray is still trying to get back to whatever normal is in terms of Gray's life. And I don't think you could necessarily remove the possibility that Gray could be wrong here.
Right. But it's something to try. And that's really all that they could possibly hope for at this moment, because nothing else has fucking worked.
Yeah, that's the scary part of this whole episode. Is that nothing that they try works.
I remember you crying to me. Father, I can feel the pain.
Trojan Ends is still yelling at Book down in engineering.
Seems like he had a difficult childhood, this Cleveland Booker.
Yeah, they really have kind of opposite values, where Dad was the hunter and killer of endangered species on Quajon. Book was a environmentalist and trying to restore habitats.
You know how terrible my childhood was for me to throw away my given name and instead name myself Cleveland? As if Cleveland is some kind of upgrade to my given name? That's how much I hate you, Dad.
I wonder if they will ever go into the backstory of why he picked a different name. I mean, if my name was Durex, I would change my name too, to be clear.
Yeah, I've got a question about Cleveland Booker's name. And the question is very simple. What would a Quajon know about Cleveland? Were other possible names on the table? Fresno?
Like, was he trying to pass as human?
I'm going to take my question off the air. Because I've called
this is
into
a call-in
this
radio show now.
I've called into this this sci-fi convention because no attendees are allowed because we're back in a pandemic.
Yeah, cool. Great news. Thank you, anti-vaxxers.
Get a life.
So it's getting really bad. Up on the bridge, there's like a like ad hoc McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Where they're trying to strategize about different ideas. Reese is talking about, like, let's shoot a million photon torpedoes at it.
Unlike other shows where there's a limitation to the number of photons.
Right, right. They basically have an unlimited supply for all intents and purposes here. But they're like bangers are getting dropped on the ship as they are having this conversation. And they find out that engineering needs some shoring up. And Owosu-kun wants to be the person to lead the team to go do it. She really gets shouted down here by Saru, who sends Dots, which we now know to be expendable.
Saru.
Not as expendable as Cortez, who nobody has shed a tear over, aside from Zora.
Owo is like, but what mean expendable, Saru? And Saru is like, well, it's like if you're in a crazy vacuum of space situation and you got a bunch of dots to send out. And if those dots are tortured and killed on the view screen in front of everyone, doesn't really matter.
Bryce is like, hey, listen, let me put the sound from outside up on the speakers. We are living the quiet life. We're living it.
They get to Reese, and Reese is for some reason wearing a red bandana now. Made out of the dress that the dot was murdered in. We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
In the captain's ready room, Zora, the captain, and Gray are trying to work the problem.
We're going to need to keep saying that Zora is attending these meetings, right? Even though it should be taken as fact forevermore that Zora attends all meetings everywhere on Discovery.
It is kind of interesting that sometimes Zora chooses to have a representation of herself and sometimes lets people forget that she's listening.
Honestly, Zora is like the Zoom meeting attendee that turns off the camera. Like,
Zora
could do this at any time.
Yeah, Zora could be looking at tax documents and nobody would know.
Zora could be tubining at basically every meeting and we wouldn't know about it.
Yeah. So Zora is still kind of broken up about all of the bad things that have happened and is fearful about what could happen to the ship if bad stuff keeps happening. So Michael Burnham kind of talks Zora through some like bravery 101 ideas about what you do. You know, Michael Burnham, no win scenario, something, something, something. How do we do this podcast?
And you think that the ship has somehow gone beyond these functions? It's developing a new capacity.
Yes, sir.
This is an intolerable situation.
The yikes at the end of this meeting, though, Ben, that's like everyone's kind of reassured that Zora will step up when it's time.
Yeah.
She can't guarantee that at the moment, but... But she's like, yeah, thanks, Michael, for telling me that everyone feels guilt.
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can get past that when the moment arrives.
Fingers crossed. Trust is earned, I guess.
No one makes the case that, hey, Zora, if you can't get it together, you die with us. So maybe if out of a sense of self-preservation, if nothing else... You can kind of get it together for that reason.
But I love me, and I am not going to let this experiment blow me up.
There's so much in TNG about Data being like a really special artifact in addition to being their friend and colleague.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of case could be made to Zora in this moment, but I guess we're not quite there. Michael Burnham gets called down to Six Bay where they're like, great news, Book is going to stop hallucinating in about an hour.
You hear that, Book? Everything's going to be fine real soon.
Your dad's going to stop being a shithead in 1 hour. That's it.
Things no one ever tells the sons of bad dads.
Yeah, yeah. But also, his brain particles are evidence. This is the stuff that they came to the rift to find. It's in his head.
Right now, we have a crime scene.
They cut back over to a shot of Book, and Book's got one of those like tinted evidence markers, like right on top of his head, like it's a bullet casing.
Yeah, yeah. They put one of those red stir straws from a cheap coffee shop in it to show the trajectory that the particles entered his head.
Yeah. Pollard's got one of those L-shaped rulers and a digital camera ready to take some pictures.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody put some Vicks VapoRub on their top lip.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. These are particles that only exist in the galactic barrier. So the DMA punched into the Milky Way from outside of it, which is a pretty surprising result.
Where did your mind go at the reference of the galactic barrier and what may be beyond it? I mean, my mind immediately went to Shakari.
What does God need with a starship?
Yeah, but that was the middle of the galaxy.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought that was the galactic barrier.
Oh, was it?
I don't know.
Maybe it is Shakari. Wow. If this winds up being a big Star Trek V situation, I'm going to be very excited about this season of Disco.
I also think the Whales probe from Star Trek IV came from outside the galaxy too, right? Isn't that the truth?
It came from far away anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I thought of was when the Traveler came aboard the D and made them go like further than anyone had ever gone before.
Mm.
But there were just like sperm swimming outside the ship when they did that, right? Those didn't seem like mean sperm.
Will Wheaton's like, I will only host After Trek if you bring me back to Disco as a traveler companion.
As the heavy,
yeah.
Season four.
This is all Wesley Crusher's fault.
We can use that puncture point to get out. We found a way out. There's an extragalactic energy particle.
So these particles happen to vibrate at a particular frequency, and they figure out, like, if we punched through the outside of this rift, some of these particles are going to be out there, and we can figure out where they are by hitting them at their resonant frequency using an ancient Earth technology called sonar. And so, of course, Captain Burnham knows what to ask for.
One ping only, please.
Except when Michael Burnham does it, there's like a huge speech that ends with one ping only. Right. They ping and they wait and they wait and they wait. And then they get the return ping.
Yeah, very exciting. And they've got 10 minutes of shields left and they got to start moving toward this thing. And the ship is going to get super hot when they go back through the plasma barrier, the thing that they went through before. And this is a problem because they just don't have that much power left. So the idea that Michael Burnham comes up with is, like Scotty in that episode of TNG, everybody's going to hide out in the pattern buffer of the transporter.
Yeah.
Until they're through.
That's absolutely brilliant. Well, I think it was only 50% brilliant.
Which you got to believe, given the centuries that have passed, is just a better system altogether.
Yeah. Fingers crossed that is a little bit more dialed in than the miracle of it working when Scotty tried it.
You don't cross your fingers, Saru. You keep those gross out separate. Everyone else cross your fingers.
Yeah. So the captain goes like, you know, the bosun's whistle rings and the captain announces this plan to the whole ship, and like nobody is freaked out about it at all. Everybody just starts transporting into the buffer.
This was really speedy, wasn't it?
It was really
from order
very
to action.
Efficient.
This also takes advantage of the haste that the flash beam does.
Yeah.
You're out of there.
They're just gone. We get a couple of lingering moments. One, with Gray and Adira and Squid Face Guy, who I didn't know was friends with them, but
you know what, Ben? I don't want to cut too far to the end, but when the crew gets out of the buffer, mm-hmm. Squid Faced Guy and Adira have Tuvixed, and it's Squidira that we get at the end, and I think I know what the next episode's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's like, Squidira is kind of like the best of Adira and the best of Squidface Guy.
I mean, how could we possibly separate them? It would be murder.
It would be terrible. Do you want that on your conscience, Michael Burnham? Justice for Squidira.
Yeah. Hey, look, we'll beam Squidira over to the new Voyager and adjudicate things there.
Yeah.
Doesn't anyone see that this is wrong?
Before Owo and Detmer go, Owo is like, hey, we haven't unpacked that much trauma on this episode, so I just want to make sure we check that box, because this is an episode of season four of Star Trek Discovery. So I'm going to tell Saru about somebody that died when I was a kid. And
just in case you haven't watched any other episode, no character's decisions are unmotivated by trauma.
Saru really appreciates that, so much so that he's willing to go into the buffer with Detmer and Owo. And Booker is going to go in with his cat, but he has to have one last confrontation with Dental Dam before he goes. Dental Dam says the phrase, her priorities are not your priorities, or something like that.
You don't have a bigger dick than Starfleet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll never satisfy her the way Discovery can.
The way Admiral Vance can.
Just ask Zora. She's watched ships fuck all manner of things.
You'll never satisfy her the way Admiral Fishbowl full of magnums on his bedside table can.
I dropped my monster condom that I used for my magnum dong.
It's nice to hear Book and Michael Burnham say I love you to each other.
I love you, Michael.
Yeah, I think we're tight now.
Yeah, yeah. She's putting on her spacesuit to be the captain that, you know, sees the ship through the danger.
Hollywood law states that any character putting on a spacesuit must walk in slow motion through some sparks.
Uh-huh.
And we get the legally mandated hero walk here by Michael Burnham after the suit's on.
Very badass.
As a single tear runs from the corner of Michael Bay's eye. It's so beautiful.
So fucking beautiful. I thought it was all, like, I mean, this was to fulfill Hollywood law, but like every other time that Michael Burnham went up to the bridge this episode, it was through beaming directly there. So it did catch my eye.
It's so great. I don't understand. So the ship gets going and it starts heating up. And
yeah, Zora is having a lot of misgivings here, Adam. I mean, I've heard of a paranoid android, but Zora is a nervous shipwreck.
I think Radiohead had it right with their first title. This flame effect is great, I thought. Oh, I wish we lingered on the exterior a little longer. It was so good.
So beautiful. You know, like this is the plasma barrier and it takes a long time to get through. So the bridge is like the whole fucking, every flamethrower on the bridge is in full effect.
Yeah.
Michael Burnham's spacesuit is not going to be able to protect her completely. And so she is like talking to the ship about, you're going to have to wake everybody up, get them out of the pattern buffer once it's safe. We cut down to Saru's quarters. Every plant in there is on fire. We cut to the storage bay where they grow all the mycelial network mushrooms, and those are all on fire. This is bad.
We cut to the food replicators, and like every burrito inside is on fire.
The ship asks Michael Burnham if a song would help her get through the heat. And Michael Burnham agrees to be serenaded to her death. And the ship goes, we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The temperature's rising. It isn't surprising. This ship certainly can.
You are a delight.
Zora singing the Irving Berlin songbook.
I'm glad you put a credit on that, Ben. I didn't get the reference at all. Still very delightful for me and everyone else to watch that happen, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's so crazy. Last night on one of my antenna channels, they were playing Face Off at like 11 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And because I'm as sick as hell, I've been staying up way late. I'm just not sleeping.
Oh, yeah,
at all.
Good idea. Definitely don't want to.
Well, I can't sleep because I can't breathe.
Oh.
Face Off is on. And you remember that scene where there's the shootout in the loft apartment and they put the headphones on little Adam and Adam's listening to Somewhere Over the Rainbow while the entire loft apartment's getting shot up? That's what this scene reminded me of.
Yeah.
Shit's going down and it's like a John Woo movie.
It really is.
That's what I would ask him. If I ever got to sit next to Jonathan Frakes, I'd ask him what the inspiration was for this moment and if it wasn't John Woo.
No way.
Wow. Wow. To have an opportunity like that and squander it just seems insane.
Yeah. We get a long, slow fade to black here, Ben. Anything can happen in this kind of fade.
Yeah. Writing Michael Burnham off the show could have happened.
Mm-hmm. The ship is destroyed. Everyone's dead.
Michael Burnham wakes up on the slab.
Yeah, she comes to basically to the friendliest faces you could wake up to. Culber. Yeah. Book and Saru. Mission accomplished is the banner behind her bio bed. She shows the kind of emotional relief that Starfleet captains are rarely given permission to show. She is super pumped.
Really, really happy to see everybody. Booker is really happy to see her and not his fucking father.
We cut to the cat carrier and it's just like scorched fur.
it's a really brief scene also. Like it's like we got what we came for. The forensic evidence that we came looking for is now in the databanks of the ship. And then we cut to the exterior and Disco is getting rebuilt in that space dock that they unveiled in episode one of the season.
I know this is too much to ask, but for all the damage we're seeing of the ship in dock, I wanted to feel the moment of a crippled Discovery arriving at the dock and the looks on people's faces. Like, I want to see the react that other people have to seeing Disco in that condition, because that would hit super hard.
Like the Enterprise in the movie coming back from battle with Khan and people in space dock having real emotional reactions to seeing the flagship that torn up.
For a show that trades in emotion, I was shocked that they didn't take advantage of that avenue.
Is the ship getting refit? Is it going to be the Discovery B when they get it back?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. Let's give us 4 nacelles this time.
That'd be cool. Go twice as fast.
What we get is Saru and Book looking out a window at Discovery, not feeling the emotions we're describing, just kind of checking it out, checking out the work. It looks like they're going to get some time off, which they've got to be relishing.
Saru is like, one of the great things about working on starships in this 32nd century is the advanced materials we have to use in these systems. We're taking out some rotted old boards that were 24 inches on center and replacing them with brand new engineered lumber that's arrow straight and 16 inches on center.
With programmable matter, it means you can arrive on your job site ready to go each and every morning without having to pack a van full of equipment or lumber or anything else for that matter.
I still feel rage.
But you seem so balanced, so calm.
We're both justified in our anger.
Book is still haunted by the idea of the DMA being from outside the galaxy and is also like gripped by the anger at his father. And this is a hell of a combination because it makes Book want to destroy the DMA. And Saru knows this feeling. Saru compares the DMA to the Ba'ul.
I have to break bread with the Ba'ul whenever I have a political meeting on my planet.
Saru's like, you better get with the program, man. Soon the DMA will be in whatever's left of your planet's Congress voting on bills. It's gonna be the dead bird party.
Yeah.
The dead dad party and the DMA party.
Sounds like a combination.
But because this show is about exchanging emotional currency, this is the point of this. Saru and Book agreed that it's okay to struggle in this way. Yeah. Here, why don't you take some of my revenge currency? Mm-hmm. You can give me some of yours. It doesn't spend as well as guilt currency. The exchange rate's pretty rough.
But anyways, thanks for sharing your pain.
It appears you've nearly finished.
What do you think?
It's a powerful image of hope and connection. A fitting way to end this day.
In the captain's quarters, Michael Burnham is working on her tree once more. And Zora's like, I like your art project, Cap. I want to make one. And from what I could tell, pretty much makes the same tree. Like, what's different about Zora's tree?
I mean, it's bigger and has everyone, right?
And doesn't have, like, Michael Burnham's mom. Maybe.
It just sucks. Like, this is totally, like, the next stall over. Like, Zora has taken out a fucking pipe of a family tree here. And Burnham's standing there with like, an average-sized tree. A tree that most people would be happy with.
Respectable tree.
Yeah. Yeah, a tree that really does the work.
And you know, it's not always all about having the biggest tree.
No.
Sometimes it's about skill.
Sometimes you can do things with the foliage to make the tree look bigger.
Sometimes you can do things with your tongue to make up for what the tree can't do.
Yeah, there is a lot of arborist shame here, I guess.
This is different, but it's good.
That's the end of our episode. This other tree that Zora has made, this tree that shows... the whole crew,
yeah.
Zora's sincere affection for and consideration of the whole crew as family, essentially.
There's that one tortured and murdered dot just like in the dirt outside that tree.
Cortez, for some reason, not on the tree.
Yeah. Hey, who grieves for Cortez? Did you like this episode, Ben?
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We've encountered them.
Those are Klingons?
I really did, Adam. I was feeling kind of down on Disco last ep, and I don't think that this ep is, like, we talked about the idea that maybe that one was setting something up that would, in retrospect, make it seem better. That's not quite how I'm looking at this, but I did feel like this was a really solid episode. Mm-hmm. I really liked how much time we spent on the bridge with the bridge characters.
Yeah, I like that scene where they all got together troubleshooting.
Yeah.
That was a solid part of the ep.
It felt like a episode of Star Trek where some real Star Trek shit happened, and so it was kind of an interesting conundrum. The hand-waving past Zora stuff seemed weird at the start of the episode, but by the time the episode was fully underway, it was like Zora was like being considered very deeply within the context of the story. So it wound up making sense. And I liked it a lot.
I think I'm feeling more like you felt at the end of the last episode, at the end of this episode.
Oh, interesting.
But when Michael says at the very end, this is different, but it's good, I think she's describing this Discovery season to me personally. That, like, that's how I feel. I think where I struggle with this show is anytime I try to compare it to previous Star Trek, I like it when I don't. Like, this is the therapy ship Discovery, and everyone really loves and cares about each other over and above, you know, any other crew ever has. And if I can just get on that level with this show, there's a lot to enjoy here. And that is the reason that I enjoyed this episode. But it can be challenging sometimes to do that, because to see characters act where their primary interest is in the love for another person, the love and consideration for another person, instead of even the very mission that they're on, that takes an adjustment. That is something I'm still adjusting to when I watch this show. And I think in that way, that is how I will contextualize whether or not I like the ep. Like, when I'm able to do that, I like the episodes. I was able to do that here, so I do. But that can be a challenge episode to episode. And that's, I think, where I'm at with this. I think what would make me love the season in its entirety is some sort of conclusion to this story that makes it less about emotional obligations and debts being paid and more professionals doing professional work as a top line motivation and a secondary motivation as, you know, the care and feeding of our friends and family on the show, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like that one moment where Owo is like they literally like have a clock ticking and Owo is like, hey, by the way, somebody I knew when I was a kid died.
Yeah, there's just no
really,
time for that.
That definitely pulls me out
in
a way that I don't think they're going for.
You can have that scene, but you can move it to the scene where Book and Saru are looking out on the ship after it's being reconstructed. Like, we don't need... It's a sequence issue. It's not a should-it-exist issue.
Yeah, well, and I think that I also have a should-it-exist issue from the standpoint of it is just... It feels so much like so many of the other scenes in this season.
Everyone gets a turn.
I've gotten my fill of that kind of moment.
Yeah.
So, all that being said, I like the episode, but I also really like opening up Priority One messages.
Oh yeah, almost as much as I love opening up a box from Bill Tilly. Let's see what we got over there.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we've got one Priority One message. It is from Josh, and it is to Dr. Stina Stinkins. And goes like this. Happy 40th birthday, my sweet Amzadi. You are the Troy to my Riker, the Cassidy Yates to my Sisko, the Stamets to my Culber, and of course, the Rashan to my Kevin.
Mm.
You made the last 2 years the happiest of my life, and I look forward to the rest of our days together in a nice house with good tea. I love you, and that's not Silly Geordi.
Hey, happy birthday, Doctor.
Yeah, Dr. Stinkins. I hope you have a great... Well, you get a dirty 30. What do you get for 40? Sporty 40?
Yeah, time to lace him up and put on the old pads, Dr. Stinkins. It's time for...
Hit the pitch.
It's time to swing the old baseball tube and tackle that soccer ball for your sporty 40.
Wow. Well, happy birthday. If you out there listening would like to get a Priority One message for someone, please do so. Go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set it up. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
I guess I got to give it to Owo. You know, it wasn't just the, like, I want to go throw myself in harm's way when we could just as easily send Dots, but also the there's a clock ticking and I'm going to make the case for why I made a bad error in judgment earlier.
Right.
So just a couple of at-bats on the wasting everybody's time thing for Owo this episode. Which sucks because I like Owo as a character.
Yeah, a really thankless character job here.
Yeah,
Owo's given to doing. Yeah.
How about yourself?
I mean, this is definitional Larkin. I'm gonna make my Larkin Zora.
Wow.
I fear Zora a great deal here. I do not trust Zora. I think it may be time to unplug Zora or like. Partition Zora in such a way that that we're not needing to counsel the ship's computer about.
Yeah.
The ship's computer should be a calculator, man.
Yeah.
You should ask questions, hit some buttons, and you should get an output, not a choice.
You want them to put Zora in that weird yellow thing that they put Moriarty in?
If you're taking a physics test and your TI-82 says that they'll maybe graph out... a wave for you. That's not a good test taking moment right there. You're really fucked. Yeah.
And then your teacher's like, "How the fuck did you get a calculator in here?"
I took all kinds of tests where they allowed calculators.
Wow, you went to a cool school.
Yeah, I went to open book high school, and you went to croquet college.
I had a math teacher express to me that she didn't particularly care for me in high school.
God, that is so sad.
It was fucking brutal. She sucked.
I can't believe how fucked up that is.
I know.
At the same time, though, I am also inclined to be like, teachers have the hardest jobs in the world. And if and if part of what soothes you is telling a Benjamin R. Harrison that you don't care for them particularly, like, I get that. Yeah.
You notice that I don't have a career in STEM.
Yeah, instead you have a career in Star Trek podcastry. Good for you.
Which ironically was an elective I took junior year.
Yeah, that'd really make that teacher proud, Ben. What's going to make them proud about the next episode?
The next episode is season 4, episode 7, But to Connect? Tensions rise as representatives from across the galaxy gather to confront the threat of the dark matter anomaly. Zora's new sentience raises difficult questions.
So, do the Kelpians get to vote here, and do the Ba'ul get to go to this meeting, I wonder?
Oh, man.
I want to see, like, you wheel in the Ba'ul like the navigators from Dune, like in their little tanks.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They hold Somebody's up a tentacle to vote.
Go behind it with a squeegee to mop up all the...
I love this idea. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, man. The meeting hall at the at Camp Kittimer is just going to be such a fucking mess after this meeting.
Yeah. No one's going to be able to use that hotel room after the Ba'ul finish with it.
Not at all. Wow. Well, I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be next week right here on The Greatest Discovery. Thank you for sticking with us through the holidays. And looking forward to a great 2022 with this show.
Yeah. Yeah, look at us.
It's fun.
Sliding into another year with The Greatest Discovery. We survived our 30 weeks in a row. earlier. We're really doing it.
Yeah.
This is what thriving looks like, Ben.
Yeah. We'll have a producer by the time people hear the next episode.
Can't believe it. Yeah. Is that this episode?
Not this episode. I don't think she'll be editing next episode either, but it'll be she'll be on the payroll by next episode.
Nice. That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to the next episode too, Ben.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
I'm not looking forward to these credits, though.
No.
No matter who's reading them.
Wow. Thanks for that read-in, guys. The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. This episode was edited by me, Colin Ketchin. Our music is by Adam Ragusea, who also has a great YouTube cooking channel. Seriously, if you just search for Adam space R, that's it. His name will pop up. That's how good it is. On Instagram and Twitter, we're at Greatest Trek. And those accounts are run by the Card Daddy and Feklar Claus himself, Bill Tilly. If you enjoy the show, help us out by leaving a nice review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts, and recommend the show to a friend to help us grow. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
Sniffles as birds today.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.